Nanny, nanny, boo, boo, listen when you want to.
Hello, y'all, and welcome to Snacks for the Brain, episode number 43 and counting. This episode will be taking a look at brain research and some differences in the way men and women think, according to some very recent research findings. There's also a nifty tech tip, this time hearkening back to the weekly tech tip from the fabulous CompletelyFreeSoftware.com, courtesy of Dr. T and via WorldStart.com's bank of user-friendly tips. I had some feedback from listeners last time that some of our recent tips have been more or less lost on them. Perhaps a little too. So this show, I'm providing a simple, clear overview for ye. What are sound cards, graphic cards, network cards, and all those other cards about? All coming up in our tasty, tantalizing, and trusty tip. Along the way, hear three summer-themed songs. A rocker from the national indie band The Tragedy Kings, an eerie electro mashup from the talented Aryaphonics, and a nifty reggae piece from the San Francisco Bay indie group Monkey. Sounds very diverse this week, very eclectic, very listenable. All these are from my trusty song sources at the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Check them out. And I'm adding a fourth song this week. Why?
Because I can!
It's from my new colleague at University School of Nashville, the talented Mr. Brandon Wilson. That's it. Buckle up, snuggle up, or huddle up, but by all means, listen up to Snacks for the Brain!
Let's hear first from Nashville's Tragedy Kings. Take it away, boys!
with the Tragedy Kings with Summertime Blues. Thought we'd start off with a rocker today. Yes, indeedy. Let's go ahead and knock out the tech tip tidbit, because I think it's pretty cool, and I hope you're interested in learning about what all those cards are all about. Here it is.
For you. For you.
All right, here we go with the tech tip tidbit. Question, what are sound cards, graphic cards, network cards, and all those other cards all about? Answer, you might hear of different kinds of cards on a PC. Some are usually included as basic hardware, while others offer optional features. Most basic PCs will include a sound card, a video card, and maybe a network card. Graphic accelerators and video capture cards are usually add-on accessories. Video card,
also known as graphics adapter, display adapter, or video adapter.
It's the circuit board enabling a computer to display information on the screen. Your resolution, number of colors, and monitor refresh rate are determined by your video card plus the limitations of the monitor itself. Sound card. This card makes it possible to use a microphone or line in to record, or speakers, headphones, and line out to play sound. Most will include MIDI controllers, often called SW Synth. Network interface card.
Also called a NIC.
NIC. This adapter board is plugged into a computer so it can be connected to a network. Ethernet cards. This is a kind of network card that lets a computer connect to an Ethernet. It plugs into the computer or may be built into the motherboard. The Ethernet cards on each computer are connected by cables. Accelerator card. This printed circuit board usually plugs into a computer's expansion slot to make the computer work faster. For instance, a graphics accelerator card speeds up the time it takes for images to appear on the screen. Video capture card. Converts analog video signals, like the ones made by a video camera or VCR, into a compressed digital format that your computer can save. TV tuner cards. These allow you to watch digital or analog television channels right on your computer. Many, like WinTV-D, WinTVD, include a video capture feature and stereo surround sound capability. If you would like faster graphics, networking, or TV tuning features that you currently don't have, then shop around for one of those cards mentioned above. Most budget PC makers use the cheapest components they can find, so your graphic and sound cards might not be that great. You may want to upgrade. I know it may sound scary, but it's easier than you think. That's it from WorldStar.com's wonderful, wonderful bank of tips. Thanks, Dr. T, and thank you, Completely Free Software, where these tips are also shared. I highly recommend Completely Free Software, no spaces, all lowercase, .com. Let's listen to a little electronic music from the Ariaphonics at music.podshow.com. This is called Summer Moon.
Leave me.
Okay, if I haven't mellowed you out just too completely, I'd like to move on to our wonderful interview with Dr. Stephen Camerata. This interview is about brain research that indicates that women of all ages have an advantage over men. They think faster and so tend to do better on time tests. Let me just read you quickly the introduction of Melanie Moran's recent article at the Exploration website at www.vanderbilt.edu/exploration. A wonderful website, by the way. Here we go. Women of all ages have an advantage over men. They think faster and so tend to do better on time tests. New research attempting to shed light on the evergreen question, just how do male and female brains differ, has found that timing is everything. In a study involving more than 8,000 males and females ranging in age from 2 to 90 from across the United States, Vanderbilt researchers Stephen Camerata and Richard Woodcock discovered that females have a significant advantage over males on timed tests and tasks. Camerata and Woodcock found the differences were particularly significant among preteens and teens. What does this mean for the way that we have been assessing children in our public and private schools for pretty much ever? Listen up as I talk with Dr. Stephen Camerata and we explore this point. I think you'll find it really interesting. Here we go. So the article was about your research with Dr. Woodcock?
Yes.
Which reveals some findings about the differences in the way that boys and girls, and I guess by extension men and women, process information. And assuming my listeners know nothing about this,
right,
and that many of them are teachers, and many of them are students, how would you describe that research?
Yeah. All right, so Dr. Woodcock is one of the world's foremost test makers. He's the senior author on the Woodcock-Johnson series of tests. These tests are designed to measure intelligence and various aspects of intelligence, and also then achievement or academic performance. We might think of achievement as being the application of intelligence to academic subjects. So he had, as a result of that work, a database that included more than 10,000 people. So wonderfully rich
that's
database.
That's a big, broad base.
Nice database, yeah. That's why I'm confident of our findings. You know, we have a really nice sample to work with. The idea was initially to go to this database and look broadly for differences we might see between boys and girls. So we went in without necessarily having a specific intellectual ability or specific achievement ability targeted. Now clearly in the past research, people have argued, for example, that there are differences in writing ability with females having an advantage. And things like that, those have cropped up from time to time.
This some is a way of the stereotypical
sort of stereotypical kinds of things, some of which turn out to be true and some which don't.
Stereotypes are like that.
They are like that, exactly. And so in this case, we wanted to start off and say, okay, given current theory of intelligence, where there's 9 broad abilities, are there male and female differences in these broad abilities? Now, the nice thing about this database is we were able to go to a data set that where the intelligence, the overall intelligence between the men and the women was the same, or boys and girls was the same. And so then we could look for differences in these sub-areas. So by definition, the males would be better at some things and the females would be better at others. Well, to make a long story short, what came up as the most consistent finding was that females started off with a slight advantage, which turned into a large advantage in adolescence, for a cognitive ability that we call processing speed. Mm-hmm. This is the ability to do moderately difficult items efficiently and accurately. I want to be sure that I make it clear that we're not talking about difficult, highly difficult problem solving. Okay, so for example, one of the tasks that you do for this would be to read a sentence and decide whether it's true or false. This is an achievement version of this for you. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you might have a sentence like, grass is red. So you read that sentence and then decide if it's true or false. And you give them a lot of these things, and you time it, and you see how quickly they can do that kind of task. And so what we find out is that in kindergarten, boys and girls are relatively similar, with the girls having a slight advantage. In an elementary school, the difference gets bigger. In middle school, it gets bigger. And then in high school, it's huge, with females having a highly significant advantage in processing speed. Now, the way I like to characterize this and the way that one of the ways we analyzed it was, mm-hmm, give a task of moderate difficulty, then when the females get about half of them right, the males are only going to get about 23% right in that high school sample.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big effect and a big difference.
That is a big effect.
And when you think about the ramifications of that, you think about things like homework. You think about things like tests that involve repetitive kinds of things. This would be an advantage for the females in the processing speed. Now, some people have asked me, said, well, why don't we see a difference in the SAT or something like that? Well, the SAT is designed to sample, in addition to moderate difficulty, also higher levels of difficulty. And so processing speed, by definition, doesn't sample quantitative knowledge. It doesn't sample spatial ability. It only samples that neurological clock, processing speed. So that's why it's only that ability. So SATs aren't designed to sample processing speed. That's included in it, mm-hmm. you know. But the items are designed to be more difficult, so we're not really testing processing speed in the SAT, so that's why it doesn't behave quite as our high school sample behaves. So we really think it has more applicability to things like tests like time tests you might have in high school, quizzes, mm-hmm. homework assignments. If you think about homework, they're often designed to be of moderate difficulty and repetitive practice to get it into long-term memory. Mm-hmm. But males might have more difficulty with that relative to females. So we think that there's a profound implication for this. So after we did the analysis of the cognitive abilities, we then looked for correlates in achievement, which I said was the application of intelligence to academic tasks. Well, what we find is that in terms of math achievement, there's a slight but significant advantage for males if it's an untimed test. When you make it a timed test, in fact, in math fluency, which is the ability to solve these moderately difficult problems, mm-hmm. effectively, there's no difference between males and females. And then when you go to reading and writing fluency, what's a small advantage for females becomes, in terms of reading competency and writing competency, becomes a big advantage in writing and reading fluency for females. So if you're giving a timed test that's written, there's a huge advantage for females, in part because of the context knowledge for reading and writing, but even to a larger extent because females are more effective at processing speed.
So when we're talking processing speed in this context, we're talking about language processing speed?
Or no, this isn't language. I mean, it includes language.
Right.
It's actually the ability to perform any task. It could be a visual task. Mm-hmm. It could be a reading task like I gave the example to. Another way we test it, for example, is to give a series of digits, and then you have to scan and find the digits that match.
Uh-huh.
So it's called visual matching.
Right.
So this is true for visual matching, and it's true for the reading and writing fluency. It's true for any of the tasks that we measured that involve doing tasks of moderate difficulty quickly and accurately. Females seem to have a solid advantage. Now then, after adolescence, the males and females become more similar, and then as they get older, it spreads back apart again, so that senior females are much better than senior males at processing speed. So in early adulthood and in middle age, there's an advantage for females, but it's not quite as big as it was in high school, and then it gets big again. And in the older populations, it could be because of health issues and so on. We don't really know exactly how to interpret that.
Right. Well, I noticed in the Melanie Morin article in Exploration that your database went all the way up to age 90.
It did, yeah, right.
So you've got all kind of widespread of it.
We do. We have from 4 years old up to 90. And these
broad
abilities. So, yeah, it's really
a neat database. Hey, y'all. I'm really enjoying this interview, and I hope you are, too. I'm sensing a need for music. So I'm going to kick out right now to a little reggae piece from a Seattle-based group from music.podshow.com. The group is called Monkey. Yeah.
So I've seen that the Explorations article is based on the Internal Intelligence publication. Are you getting attention from other organizations or other media?
In response
to your article?
Yeah, it was. There was a reference to it in Newsweek. There was an article on differences in boys and girls and some of the challenges boys are facing in school. And it was just a one sentence mention in there.
Oh, but it's nice to pop into Newsweek, isn't it?
I guess. I mean, you know, I'm happy if people use the work, and I'd be really happy if teachers use it to understand why some of their boys are struggling who might otherwise be intelligent. You know, I think
let's talk about that for a second. There's. I mean, we have been testing people and assessing the way performance is performed for pretty much ever using sort of time tests.
Right.
One would think a teacher who is invested in getting the correct information or the informed information about their students would take this under consideration when they...
Yeah, I think it's important because, you know, by and large, teachers I've encountered are very dedicated and very interested in making sure their children, their students under their charge learn the content. And if I see a student, particularly a male, although females with low processing speed would have the same problem. Uh-huh. Well, there is overlap here in the distribution. There are females who have slow processing speed as well.
Yeah.
But on average, males are going to be a little bit worse off than females in this domain. But when I see someone who's struggling, then I have to ask myself the question, is it because of the nature of the way that I'm assessing the person, or is it the actual content knowledge the person possesses?
Mm-hmm.
So we see children in our work. I work with children with disabilities, various kinds of disabilities, including autism and Down syndrome and other things like that. And there are certainly children we see who have the content knowledge, but they're so perfectionistic that they don't do well in a time test because they want to be sure they're right. They're going to trade off speed for accuracy.
And you say that that's across the genders?
Our study doesn't inform us exactly why the males.
Right.
We speculate that it has to do with neural organization. It's certainly true that females tend to use both sides of their brains for tasks to a larger extent than males do. The advantage to using one side of your brain is you become more specialized in some content areas. The advantage of using both sides of your brain may be processing speed, like a co-processor, if you will. I'm speculating here. I want to be sure we don't have data to support this. It's speculation, hypothesis at this point. You know, also, if there's injury or something, then there's redundant circuitry. So there's an advantage. And we do know that females tend to have better outcomes, say, from strokes and things like that than males do.
Hmm.
You know, for similar types of lesions, as best as we can tell.
Right.
You know, one wonders if it's not this dual co-processing kind of neural circuitry that females seem to have. It's different than males. That may also account for some of the males' vulnerability to certain disabilities like autism, which is more common in males than in females.
I should mention at this point that you are... an expert. I try to shy away from that terminology, but in late-talking children, you've written a text on this?
I'm actually in the process of writing a text. I've written some articles on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with any kind of difficulty or disability where someone's having trouble learning how to communicate, and I consider myself an expert in that area. Some of those include late-talking children. I'm also an expert in late-talking children to the extent because I'm a late-talker. I'm a father of a late-talker, so I've experienced it as an individual and as a parent as well as working with the families that have children in the top way.
Well, as a parent, I'm a parent with a teenage daughter and a middle school son, and I've seen differences that might be explained by your research. How would a teacher go about beginning to assimilate this into practice?
Yeah, I think there's some pretty straightforward things. I think the first thing is to think about the kind of work you're having your class do and understanding the male and female differences. I'm certainly not in a position to suggest that we stop giving homework or stop giving time tests. I don't think that's necessarily what this research shows.
I'd probably be more radical than you in this case.
Well, perhaps so. But, I want to be careful here and only speak to what the data actually address. But I think it certainly suggests that if somebody's having difficulty, we want to think through the sources of those difficulties. And, I certainly would say, gosh, if somebody's having trouble with homework, particularly if it's homework of moderate difficulty that's very redundant, and that someone happens to be a male or a female with low processing speed, that we may want to think about cutting back on the homework, doing fewer items of higher difficulty to make sure they're getting the content, so that it's not this thing that taps processing speed, which is one of these 9 broad abilities, which may be a particular weakness for that child, whereas
really
other areas may be
preserved.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because the intuitive thing might be to scale back the homework by giving easier problems or maybe more moderate.
Well, remember that our overall sample, the males and females, had equal intelligence. So it isn't the difficulty Mm-hmm. It's the redundancy in that particular difficulty level. So it's not that the person with low processing speed, be it the majority males or a female, who's at that end of the developmental curve, mm-hmm. It isn't that they can't think. You know, it's that doing these redundant tasks over and over again of higher difficulty that they're inefficient with that.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would suggest actually using fewer items, but actually increasing the difficulty. And if they're not successful with that, then I'd scale it back. But mm-hmm. I think you might actually get engagement for things that are more challenging for someone who has, you know, typical or above average intelligence who's down on the processing speed, which is, you know, of course, most of our kids in regular classroom. But no, I would suggest increasing the difficulty and cutting back on the redundancy.
Okay. Well, that's something I can certainly take to my teachers.
Yes, like, yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. So, yeah. And then I think it's also important. I mean, we also know, everybody knows of cases where somebody's performance on time tests doesn't seem to match their skill level. Mm-hmm. So I think about using untimed tests with fewer items that have a higher, we call loading factor on the content. You know, things like that, maybe to test someone's actual content knowledge if they're struggling. What I worry about is, you know, we do, like here in Nashville, I know we have quite a high dropout rate, which I worry about. Mm-hmm. And you wonder how many people that would otherwise be successful, particularly young men, adolescent males, who actually could be successful that are actually becoming losers in the academic arena, not because of any failings in terms of their ability or their knowledge, but because they're relatively inefficient in terms of their ability to do these kinds of tasks, which are really emphasized in schools.
Which is applicable to Ian Jukes' comment when I spoke with him, is that the students are voting with their feet when it comes to how they feel high school is relevant to their future.
Right, exactly.
And maybe that's because of all the redundancy that's difficult for them to deal with, a lot of the
sure.
males anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And if you look at, say, something like math, I tutored math counts, which is a kind of a math competition for middle schoolers. Mm. I did it for a couple different schools, and we've been pretty successful with it. You know, some people, you know, that redundancy is very helpful in terms of cementing the concept in long-term memories. For others, it becomes tedious mm-hmm. and counterproductive. And you know, they may or may not vote with their feet, but they sort of do vote with their mind in terms of becoming distracted and not being as careful and as accurate as they can be. And, you know, keeping the mind engaged and curious, I think, is one of the most important things for learning. My own research in terms of teaching children how to talk certainly suggests that, where if you follow a child's lead and you follow their interests, they're going to be much more successful learning the language structures and vocabulary and things we're trying to teach, as opposed to trying to do it from the outside and having them do it in a redundant way.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly my other research suggests that a better path in some cases is to cut back on the amount of the work and make sure that it's very heavily content-laden so that it engages the child's interests.
That sounds like a good closer for the interview.
Okay.
But I want to ask you, how did you get into the path that you're in as a researcher and as an educator of educators?
Yes.
What led you to that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I got to tell you, first off, as a young person, actually a teenager, probably with processing speed, when you look back on it, although we didn't have the data back then, I've always had an affinity for children. You know, I've always enjoyed being around children, teaching children, and so on. I was a scoutmaster. I coached Pop Warner. I was always involved with young people and always enjoyed them. And then also in my neighborhood, I didn't realize how unusual this was, but in retrospect it was, we had a young man with Down syndrome who actually wasn't sent into an institution, but who was raised in our neighborhood. And so I became interested in children with special needs at that point, and that kind of then dovetailed into my interest you know, in helping children who were having difficulties. I started off, my background was in speech pathology, because of course that's where you learn how to teach people how to talk. That's what we learn in speech pathology. And then in my postdoctoral work, and then some collaborations with some psychologists, became more broadly interested in developmental disabilities. And then I was on the faculty at UC Santa Barbara, and there's a team there, a husband and wife team, Robert and Lynn Cagle, who are in the Autism Research Center, and became very interested in working with them a bit on autism, and then became intrigued with autism at that point. So it was kind of a torturous path, but it started off with an interest in children, and children with special needs that kind of came out of my own background, and then you know, became refined as I was exposed to other kinds of things in my development.
Fascinating.
And although we have many wonderful teachers and many wonderful clinicians, I also work with families who have been less than well served by the services that they've gotten. And so I do have a passion to improve the quality of services. And so that's why I'm interested in becoming a teacher of teachers and making sure that the knowledge that we pass on to our clinicians and our teachers is up to date and rooted in evidence-based practices, because there's a lot of very questionable kinds of things that go on out there. And these families that have children with autism and other kinds of things are very easily victimized by, healthcare hucksters in a way.
Or just plain misinformation.
Their children are having trouble and they're so desperate, and I just want to make sure that we're giving them absolutely everything that we can in terms of knowledge and good quality services, because that's what it takes for a child with autism to learn. This is so very important.
That's very admirable. Thank you for joining us today, and that's it for today. Snacks for the Brain!
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO.
See ya!
Thanks for listening, and I'm leaving you today with a wonderful song by Brandon Wilson called Say Goodbye. Goodbye.
Skin pilot paints a twist of fame. I turn this into love. I turn this into love. I donate a couple notes. I sing a witty phrase as an anecdote. For forgotten days. Missing melodies. That's okay. I'm broken down by a guiding hand. A lonely girl, a boy, soon to unfold. A story seldom told. Between the fireplace and eager face. Silent days. By the white of a cloud passing by on a clear night. Let's say goodbye. Say goodbye.